Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Gene.
This is Joe Grant.
And man, today's episode, we talked about politics. We talked about art. We talked about culture. What else, Joe?
We talked about filmmaking. We talked about inspiration. And most importantly, we talked about faith, grind, and inspire.
Man, you do not want to miss this one. Like, he breaks down filmmaking, and I went to school today, man. So tune in right now.
We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspire podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
Welcome back to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspire podcast. I am your host, Gene Alert. And today we have a very special guest returning to the show, a good friend of ours. And how great to start off 2020 with my boy, my brother, filmmaker, producer, entrepreneur, artist, creative, political guy, my man Joseph Grant. What's up, Joe?
Everything's great, man. What's happening? I'm just happy to be back.
Yeah, man. I'm happy to have you back, bro.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. We got some wonderful things happening, so, you know, into it.
So let's go right into it, man, because if people want to know about you, they should have listened to the last episode.
It's going to make them go back
to
the last
episode. Yeah.
I need to introduce myself again, right?
Nope. We're going right into it, bro.
All right.
So what you've been up to from the last time you were here? What's going on? I know you put out a series.
Well, it hasn't come out yet.
Uh-huh.
The series will come out for 2020.
Okay, I like that.
We're starting with a 20-city tour.
Okay.
And after the tour, it's going to be on our streaming site. So it's going to go from the tour. We're going to do the tour for about 2.5 months.
Uh-huh.
And then by July, it'll be open for viewing for everyone on streaming at Spark TV. And it's only $4.99 for the month, but we have a lot of other great things. But yeah.
Nice. So let's talk about this. Okay. Streaming service.
Yeah.
Like, what? What's going on, bro?
Well, yeah, you know, as a filmmaker,
uh-huh,
you kind of always find, you're looking for opportunities, right? You're always looking for an opportunity to showcase your film. And I've been trying to get my film on other platforms, but it's kind of hard. So I figured other people are dealing with the same problem I'm dealing with. So I partnered with these brothers over at Spark TV, mm-hmm, and our goal is to give independent filmmakers a fair shot at having their films viewed and also having them make money off of their films as well. So I don't want to, what I call the YouTube graveyard. I hate filmmakers that make great films and it goes to the YouTube graveyard,
mm-hmm,
which is on YouTube. You got to go through all these hoops and whatnot just to try to get $5 or $6 out of YouTube. And it just gets buried in the hundreds of thousands of millions of content that YouTube has to offer.
Yeah, and then you end up having to spend money to let people at least have some kind of to see it.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, even with the film festivals, and don't get me wrong, I think film festivals are wonderful situations, but what happens to a filmmaker is, you know, an independent filmmaker, we don't have a lot of money to begin with,
mm-hmm,
right? So we do our best to piece a movie together, and now to get into the film festivals, you have to pay a certain amount of money just to be looked at. You're not even in the film festival. You don't get that money back. So you put your money out. Now, once you are accepted into the film festival, you got to get there however you can, right? So you get to the film festival however you can. You put yourself up. You have to promote your film. And all this is costing you money. Even if you win a prize, the prize money you make is not even a dent in the bucket compared to the money you spent.
Hmm.
Then when you're done with that, if you don't get picked up by a streaming site, which is chances are probably one out of every 10 films will probably get picked up by a streaming site. And even if you get picked up, you'll get picked up for a decent amount of money. If you even make your money back, now you're stuck in this hole. What do you do? So you have this film that you've created that's a wonderful piece of work, and nobody can see it. So you go to the YouTube graveyard to die, and your film goes onto YouTube. So with Spark TV, we want to change that whole dynamic and give people a place that they can land. We're still toying with the idea of how much to give, but I definitely want to give more than 6 cents per stream.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to cut the viewership down to after 5,000 streams, we should be giving up each filmmaker up to 12 cents per stream.
I like that, man.
And that'll be paid quarterly to the filmmaker.
Okay. I like that model because you think about it. I like how you just broke down the cycle,
mm-hmm,
and the process,
right,
because
a lot of people want to create content. Everybody wants to, you know, they, you know, like Precious and like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those type of movies. What's the other one that came out and it just, he came out of nowhere. The guy that drinks the tea.
Oh, well, yeah, Gordon Peele. Jordan Peele, I'm sorry.
Jordan Peele. Yeah. What's the movie? It's called, oh, man.
Get Out?
Get Out. Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Get Out. Right. And so when, you know, so he, everyone's like, oh, man, I could do a movie too with it. You know, so.
Yeah, you can.
You can. But, yeah. But then, but they don't understand the process and you just sort of broke it down.
Yeah.
So now let's go deeper into this whole process thing. Because right? I consider you an entrepreneur, right?
Like,
and I consider all filmmakers entrepreneurs.
Right.
Let us know. Let the audience know. What it really takes to be a filmmaker, like just with To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy,
right?
Can you break down the process, the steps, not the entire everything, but just break down the steps of like, what do you do? What's the first thing you have to do?
First thing you have to do is figure out. You have to have a script. You got to start with a story.
Script,
right?
Story.
So you have to start with a decent story. And the sad part about it is, every bad movie starts with a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? No matter what it is, it's a great idea in your head, and trying to get that idea to camera, to screen, it's a whole lot of steps in between that you can go right and you can go wrong with. So first idea is to have a script. Then financing is very, very important.
That's the main part.
You know what I mean? That's right? The big part.
That's
finding the financing is very important. Pulling the proper crew together.
So now let's pause there.
Mm-hmm.
The money part, right?
Right.
Because you know I'm a money guy.
Right.
So finding the money, finding the capital, raising the capital, what do you have to do as a producer? Because you're a creative.
Mm-hmm.
And most creatives are not business people.
Right.
So now how do you, because now you have to pitch business people your movie, your idea, your vision.
Right.
Right? And it makes sense for you, but then how does it make sense? How do you articulate that and put that together sort of to make sense to the money guy or the money woman, you know?
So as a money guy,
mm-hmm.
money doesn't make sense to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
People hustle and determination makes sense
yes.
to you, right? So you don't
and
buy
passion.
And passion.
Yeah.
So you don't buy the money.
No.
Because what am I going to tell a millionaire, right? I'm going to go to a millionaire and tell him, listen, my movie is going to make you an extra $10,000? Oh, wow. I blew that in a strip club last night. It doesn't help them. What they want to see from me is the passion that I have and how hard am I going to work for the money that they give me, not how much they're going to give me back. And I don't think that's the return, right? The return is not about the cash money. The return is the belief in the person who's pitching.
Yeah.
So
it's true. I really believe a lot of times when people come and ask for capital, for any project, when someone comes into, like, say, my office, if they're not passionate about something, right, I have to see the younger gene in them.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, when I come, I'm like, look, it's a mistake if you don't give me this money. Like, you know?
Exactly.
Because I am hungry. I'm this. I'm passionate. If you come in, you're like, so, yeah, I have a project, and I think it might do good. I think.
Can't buy that.
I think.
Right.
Nah, bro. Like, you know, you have to come correct. So I keep going. I'm excited about this.
So it's just about the hustle, right?
Yeah.
So when you see a person come in the room, and sometimes you can over hustle.
Yeah.
Because if you over hustling, then I'm looking at you like, wow, you know.
Yeah. This is scripted.
Yeah.
It's too rehearsed.
Yeah. You're running a scam on
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
So you have
scam,
to
yeah.
find that place where you're authentic and you act, and that person has to believe the authenticity in you. So each person and how you ask for money is different, especially in the film business, because the number one thing that people understand about films is that they don't make any money. But what people have to understand about investing into a film is that you're not investing into the film. You're investing into the filmmaker.
Mm.
So it's different. So, yeah, that film didn't make any money, but that was a different filmmaker than this filmmaker. And I'm not trying to blow my own horn, but you can give me the script that you gave to somebody else who didn't make any money. I'm going to make sure that script makes money. You know what I mean? Because it just is. I'm just going to do the work necessary to make sure that that project works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're betting on the person, not on the project. Because there's many times that you'll bet on a project and you have all the things in right places. You have all the great names, all the great stars, all the great celebrities. But the filmmaker just don't have that thing. They don't have that hustle ready. And it just falls apart. So that's number
two. So how do you think a bad filmmaker gets all the actors and all the people to be part of the film if they didn't have the passion?
Because they have the money.
Got it.
Right? Okay. So actors and filmmakers and everybody else. Yeah, so it's about if I walk in a room mm-hmm. with $8 million, mm-hmm. who's going to tell me no?
Yeah, yeah.
I could be horrible.
Yeah.
But who's going to tell me no?
Who's going to tell me no?
Right? But I could be the greatest, and if I walk in a room with 80,000, I'm going to get more no's than I'm going to get yes. You know what I mean? But interest is based on performance. So the more you perform and the more people see you perform, the better you become. Right? So you take a guy like Eddie Murphy, who's now going to be on Saturday, who, you know, who's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Eddie Murphy's the biggest thing. But prior to Dolemite, Eddie Murphy couldn't sell nothing. Nobody wanted to touch him because his interest was low.
Yeah.
Now he performed with Dolemite. Now everybody wants to get at Eddie Murphy again, and they're giving him everything under the sun.
Under the sun.
So interest is based on performance. So as an independent filmmaker, you're coming in, you're going to hear no a million and one times. You do what you got to do. You make sure you get your film done and you do it to the best of your ability so that when people see that you performed, mm-hmm. now they're interested in listening to what you got to say.
Okay. So now after you find the money, you find the talent.
No, no, no.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Okay.
See, a popular misconception is that you find the money, uh-huh. then you find the talent.
Yeah.
The money and the talent can go hand in hand, right? So you might attach a big name and the big name gets you the money.
Got it.
Or you might get the money and you attach a big name. But most importantly in any film, to me, mm-hmm. is your crew.
Oh, okay.
Making sure that you have the proper crew in place. Making sure you have the proper camera person, the proper lighting people, your wardrobe people. Because all of that is what flushes out the film and makes it and gives it the body. You know what I mean? So anybody can fit the uniform. But if I don't have a uniform to put them in, I don't really have a... You know, I don't have that film. So people waste a lot of money on the actors and everything else and forget about all the little things like the wardrobe department. You have to have because if I'm doing an action
sound
film.
And-
right. So if I'm doing an action film, I'm not going to hire the same guy who I hired to do my love story because he's not an action cameraman. He's a stationary cameraman. So I have to hire a different person. Then I also have to look at stunt people, which I didn't have in my other film that was stationary. So I need all that. So making sure you have the right crew in place. And then when you get the right crew in place, then you start looking at talent.
You took me to school, bro. I didn't think about that.
But that's my process.
Yeah,
you know, everybody's process
but
is different.
That's smart.
Right.
Because the foundation, mm-hmm. right, in business, the foundation is your team.
Right.
That is your team. Like, if you don't have a strong team, like, then you see certain things after production, you're like, in editing, you're like, oh, man.
Right.
And even with the editor, if you don't have a good editor for the film.
So a film is told mm-hmm. three different times.
Yeah.
Well, four.
Four.
Right? The writer tells the film.
Okay, writer.
The director tells the film.
Okay.
Then the editor tells the actors tell the film, mm-hmm. and then the editor tells the film. So every time that film goes from one person to a next, they're telling the story because the editor is going to see something that the director didn't see and say, wow, this is going to be different if I do it this way. The director may look at a line that the writer had written and said, you know what? Let's change this scene up and put it here. The actor is going to say the words and say, you know what? I'm going to add this piece in and it's going to change the entire way the scene was written.
Because this is how I...
Right. So every time someone touches that film, they're part of the storytelling process of that film. So you have to make sure that you have all of those people, those key people in place mm-hmm. that are great. Even the lighting, and you have a lighting person, if you switch your lighting people in the middle of your film, mm-hmm. it'll show just like that. You know what I mean? Because everybody has their own technique. So your crew is very, very important, extremely important. Actors are more interchangeable than your crew can be.
Mm. Wow, that's deep.
Yeah.
But I get it. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Total sense. You know, total sense. Because even as a I'm not a producer, or director. But
you are though, right? Because you're a boss, right?
Yeah.
And there's things that you have to make sure that your team has.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come to you and say, hey, I need X, Y, and Z, you got to go produce that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're
yeah,
a producer.
Yeah. That's you, true. You know what I mean? True. You heard that, Bree? I'm a producer. So, all right. So now you got the crew. You got the money. What's next?
Got the crew. You got the money. You got your talent. Now you have to shoot.
You shoot. Okay.
Right.
So now how long typically would it take or does it take to shoot
a feature length?
A feature length, yeah.
So back in the days, it probably took you about 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like years ago, like 2, 3 months to shoot a feature. People would really sit down and anchor in and do the whole 9 yards. Now you shoot a feature in about 30 days.
A month.
Yeah. Shoot in about 30 days. But pre-production
mm-hmm.
will last you about two months, just getting everything in place. So short case, 2 months, then it takes you about a month to shoot it. And the longest process is post-production. So
the editing.
The post-production is the editing, getting the proper music, making sure that, and the editing is, you're down to the fine-tuning, all these little things like you just said, you see something in the background, it's like, wow, we might have to do a reshoot because this didn't work out. It didn't edit. It didn't cut right. All these things here. So, yeah, the editing is a very, next to directing, the editing is almost the second most important part of the storytelling process in filmmaking.
So, during this process, right? So you're talking about 3 months of just total dedication, right?
That's 3 months of shooting. Then, then you're about another 3 months worth of editing. So in the post process, wow. Yeah, you got about another
three
months.
So the editing by itself is 3 months alone.
Yeah, you're syncing sound. You're roughing it out. You're cutting scenes. You're looking at, so whatever it took you, if you have, let's say, conservatively, 1,000 hours worth of footage,
mm-hmm.
the editor's watching 1,000 hours worth of footage just to cut it to make sure that everything goes into place. You know what I mean? So that takes time. Then from there, you now have to find the right sound. So you have to send it to your score people. Right? If you're doing it right. If not, you just throw something on there. You send it to your score people and they watch the film 2 or 3 times. They look at it. This is what I feel here. They put music to it. Then they send it back to you. Now you send it to your sound design team. And your sound design team now has to say, all right, I put this bottle down. But in the film, you don't hear me put the bottle down because it was other noise. So I had to drop the noise. So now I have to add the sound of a bottle falling. I have to add my footsteps. We were shooting near the ocean. So I have to kill all that sound and ADR it all and put in the sound of ocean waves, bring the actors back in, have them do their ADR session, then Ooh. Add all that other stuff to make it look like.
This sounds like we're going over budget.
Yeah, it could happen. So when we look at some of these films, and we're like, wow, this is kind of cheesy. That's why, because they don't have the money to do all these things.
So they have to make do.
So they got to make do.
Oh, right. Man. So, okay. Woo. Just you telling me the process, I felt overwhelmed,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that means you have to be passionate to be part of this.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to, man. And
absolutely.
Like, what is the mindset of a young filmmaker in school or not in school who has a vision of doing this? Like, what type of mindset do you have to get through, not even the you know, how do you get through this process? You know, because you're talking about 6 months of pure dedication and the film's not even out yet.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't even make money. So technically, you're spending money
mm-hmm.
without making money. And if you're doing that much work, that means you're probably not going to be able to do anything else, you know, because yeah. your whole time, especially for those 30 days.
Right.
You know, and then you're dealing with different personalities.
Yep.
You're dealing with, say, Hasidity actors.
Yeah.
You know, I deserve this. Yeah. And why am I working? I don't want to be on set right. with this yeah. person. And so how do you describe that, man? Like, you know, take me into your world, Joe.
You know what, man? I'm going to be honest. I black out, man.
You black out.
I couldn't tell you how I got from there to here. You know what I mean? I really don't remember, because when we started shooting To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy, we had financing in place,
mm-hmm.
right? So you want to start with financing in place. We had it in place. And, you know, we had a promise is a comfort to a fool. So we had a promise. I didn't have to check, but I had a promise. And at the last minute, the check never showed up. So now I'm stuck. So I got these actors on set. I got the crew there. And I'm like, wow, I got to go through this thing now. I can't back out. So now I'm digging in my pockets to see what I got in there. So I'm emptying out my pockets and I'm putting everybody on the promised land themselves. And I'm just trying to hold this film together and until we can get it shot. I'm doing fundraisers here, there, everywhere.
Yeah, I remember.
Just trying to raise the money. And luckily, in the ninth hour, we was able to secure the financing and get it together and get the film out. But during that time, we're shooting. And again, I take my hat off to my crew and my actors because they believed in me enough to say, all right, well, you don't have it right now, but I know you're going to get it. They saw the passion in me. They saw what I was dealing with. They saw what was going on. And they believed in me enough to take the ride with me and take the journey. And it paid off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't know what the process is. If you ask me again how I did it, I don't know. If you ask me to repeat it, I can't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know what? As you saying that, I get that same question on the, how do you produce a show? How do you produce an event?
Right.
Right? 3,000, 4,000 people. How do you do it? To be honest, man, I've been trying to repeat it. And I can't.
You can't do it.
It's
lightning in a bottle. You don't know how to do it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But
that's not true, right? So that's faith, grind, inspire,
yeah.
Right? So that's faith.
Yeah.
And you're just moving by faith, and the gods are just putting you in the proper places to do the things necessary at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not your doing. It's the doing of the creator
mm-hmm.
that needed you to get through this to get to the next thing. Yeah. So when you start thinking on your own and saying, oh, I could do that again, you never did it in the first
place. You never did it in the first place.
So how you
going
to do it
again? Black out, right?
Right. So that's why we black out. It's like, you can't do that again because
yeah.
it was me that was carrying
yeah.
you through
yeah.
that. Right. So that's what that is.
Makes sense. You know,
when we did the Hustlers Convention, I put out the.
Yeah, that was back in January.
Yeah. So we did that. And that was just something that was like, you know, after we did To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy,
mm-hmm.
it was like, wow, man, this was a hustle. And I was talking with my boy and we was like, yo, let's just do the Hustlers Convention. And the Hustlers Convention is just for people who would not stop at, they would stop at nothing to get to their goal. And I looked around me and I saw so many people like me out there, even including yourself,
yeah.
like so many other people. And just when we put it out, the response was just amazing at how many people responded to.
Yeah, I wish I could have came. That was my wife's birthday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but when I remember when I saw the invitation, I was just like, man, this is great. You know, so tell me about it. Like, so you said you came up with it with your friend? Like,
right. Because when we was younger growing up, right, mm-hmm. I played football and coach was always about movement. Like, don't walk, run, get back. Don't throw me the football. Bring it back to me. Run it back in. Right. And it was always about that quick movement. And then I got older and it was always about doing it, getting it done, moving quickly, having to have it under no circumstance would you stop. And I just wanted to do something that acknowledged all people that had that same kind of drive and that energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's where that came from. And it's not a bad word. Right. So we assume that that's a bad word, but it's mm-hmm. not. It's just about getting it done. Webster's Dictionary says the person who would stop at nothing to achieve their goal. And that's what it is.
I like it, man. Well, congrats on that, too, bro. Like, so.
Oh, and also we made sure uh-huh. that. So one of the things, and it was beautiful, and it's always a beautiful sight to see 70 to 80 well-dressed people of color walking into the room with, you know, tuxedos, because that was mandatory.
Yeah.
That tuxedos and evening gowns. And, you know, we had it at the Stuyvesant Mansion. And though the mansion is in disrepair, it just needs some help and it needs some TLC. And I talked to Barry and I was like, man, I want to do it here because this is my neighborhood. Right. And if we don't put our love into this, then who will? So if I'm going to have a black tie affair, I'm not going to take it down. And no disrespect to any other community, but I'm not going to take it and give it to the Jews. I'm not going to give it to the Chinese. I'm not going to give it to anybody else. I'm going to give it to us. And if this is the best we have to offer, then damn it, that's the best we got to offer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Until we can do better. And the only way we can do better is unless we support one another.
Yeah.
So that's why I decided to have it there.
Keep the money inside the community to uplift the community.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know how what they say, man. When we get a dollar, it leaves quick.
So, right, right.
But then when things fall apart, I remember someone told me when I was opening up Brooklyn Swirl, like this is back in 2012, this guy, this old man, was screaming across the street, and he was like, "You're not going to survive. You're going to be closed in a year. You're not going to make it past the winter."
Right.
And I was like, this is a older black man telling me this. Right. Like, you know, in coming from church.
Right.
I was like.
But you got to remember,
you know, and so, you know, but from, you know, and I felt a little hurt. You know, I can't front. I was like, I'm going to show you, you know. And so, but it was, you know, but I understand, like, his mindset is just like, you know, he had to been like 70, 80 something, you know,
right.
Older man, you know, and, but coming from what he saw, he just knew like anything good that you put in, you know, like it's, if people don't support it,
right,
it's going to fall.
Well, you're on Sumner Avenue, man.
Yeah.
And you're talking about back in the days, he's like 70, Sumner Avenue was like the worst part of one of the worst strips on Bed-Stuy.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, in his mind, from what he saw, he'd been down so long, up don't even make sense to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're trying to do, he can't fathom that.
Yeah, he couldn't.
You know what I mean? And that's unfortunate for us as a people that we get kicked around so much that we don't even realize that all we got to do is move out the way and the person will miss. You know what I mean? And that's just an unfortunate thing. So that's why the Hustlers Convention was so important.
Yeah.
That I wanted to show people of color, yo, we could do it too. It was important for me to make sure that To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy was done independently because I wanted to show people we can make quality products without having to run and beg somebody outside of our own community to make something happen, along with creating the streaming app that working with Spark TV to make sure that all of this could be done in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And we can keep the proceeds in-house. You know what I mean?
So, Spark, are they from Brooklyn?
No, Spark, they're from New Jersey.
Oh, Jersey? Okay.
Yeah, some brothers from New Jersey.
That's cool. That's cool. And how did you connect with them? On, like, social media or?
Social media. Ironically, man, really? when I started doing the promotions for To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy, I got a lot of offers from a lot of people. But when I listened to the brothers from Spark, they seemed like they had the best thing going. They had the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
As an ambassador of arts and culture, my thing is to promote the arts the best way I can in a positive light, right? So now I'm going into my political hat where, you know, the arts are very important to me. Mm-hmm. It's not just something I do. It's who I am.
Yeah.
And I hate when people exploit the arts because we're so easy to be exploited because we always need money. So it's like, here, dance for your supper. You know what I mean? And you don't realize it took that man years to learn to dance like that while you just throw a couple of coins at him. And to you, it's frivolous. But to him, that's his lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wanted to make sure that someone who was creating the streaming app that weren't artists was creating something, a platform that respected the artists. And that's what they had in place that I liked. Everybody else had good things in place,
mm-hmm.
but they were just looking at it to make money. And these guys were looking at creating a platform that would give artists an opportunity to be men and women, not just a way for them to line their pockets.
Yeah. I like that, man. So shout out to the guys at Spark, man.
And that's S-P-R-K.
Okay, S-P-R-K.
Yeah.
All right. So, to the political side, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I know you're really active in the community with the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, but I know the city's trying to well, the DOE, the school system, is taking away a lot of art programs. Like, what are you doing, or what do you, what do you see, and how do you think that it's affecting the kids long term,
mm-hmm,
by taking away the creativity? And what do you think we could do, you know, as a community to change that?
Well, they're going to take,
because our kids are creative, you know.
Right, but they're going to take what they're going to take, right? So even in the Bible, Jesus says, "Give Caesar what is Caesar's, and give God what is God's." Right. So the school system belonged to whoever; it's not our system.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do and what belongs to us is our creativity. So with independent people like myself who are showing them, hey, I'm creating a platform for you. People like yourself, you're on the radio, you give them something to look at and say, hey, I can do that too. Right. So that's the best we can do, mm-hmm, in this situation, because trying to fight a man, it's like me coming into your house and fighting you for the remote control. You know what I mean? I'm not going to win.
I'll take the batteries out.
Exactly. You're going to do everything possible. Even when you leave, you'll take the cord. Like when my father used to leave the house, he didn't want us watching TV. Back in the days, you could disconnect the cord from the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would take the cord and hide the cord.
Yeah.
Or he would take the buttons off the TV and hide them. So if you're in my house, I have no control over what you are going to, what you're allowing me to do. But what I can do in that house is I can do my own thing, and that you can't stop me from.
Yeah.
Right. So as long as the kids can see that there's a black man who comes from the same community that they did, mm-hmm, that raised his own money to shoot a film, and he didn't raise it in a nefarious way. He raised it by doing certain things. A black man that created a streaming app, a black man that became the ambassador of arts and culture. When they see that, and I had the same education opportunities that you did, and some of the same pitfalls where they started taking away programming. Hey, you could, maybe I can do it too, but it can't just be me, right? It can't be you. It has to be a plethora of us.
Yeah.
It has to be all of us who consider ourselves entrepreneurs to be visible to the youth and be accessible to the youth and say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I can do. And this is the information I have for you to be the next me.
Makes sense, man. Well, I know you're deep into the school system, mm-hmm, man. So I applaud you, bro.
Yeah.
So what are your plans for 2020?
Man, 2020, man. So 2020, I turned 50,
mm-hmm,
right? And I call this my sucker-free 50 year.
I like that.
So all the nonsense I dealt with for the 50, you guys had 50 years of my life,
uh-huh,
to invade me with your foolishness. Now I'm like that old guy who's like, you know, that old lady who just says whatever she wants to say, and that old man who just does whatever he wants to do. Mm-hmm. That's me right now. So I don't want any suckers around me. You know what I mean? And if you are, I'm calling you out. That's my 2020 gift to myself.
I like that, man.
You know what I mean?
So what does 2020 mean to you?
2020 means to me independence and freedom. And independence and freedom. My goal is to live in 2020, mm, and beyond. Up until then, I think I was just surviving,
mm-hmm,
just trying to get through the days and from point A to point B, and just everything was a grind. And now I think I've grinded out enough, and I want to survive. I want to live, and I want to enjoy the fruits of my labor, which is whatever that may be.
Yeah, thrive.
Yeah, I just want to. It's about me right now.
Yeah.
It's about me and those closest to me.
Yeah, you put in the work.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's what 2020 means.
I like that, man.
Yeah.
So,
I created a lot, right? So
yeah, you have, bro.
I've done a lot, like even in Bed-Stuy, and I was just in my tenure with the council member,
mm-hmm,
the art walk, the Bed-Stuy Film Festival, the Bed-Stuy Theater Group. When we came in, there was the art scene was very sparse. There wasn't, yes, a big art scene. Now it's flourishing. The project ambassador of arts and culture actually worked, because even in our office now, where we have other people, we have a director of arts and culture, we have a camera person to capture all this that didn't exist, mm-hmm, prior to me coming in. And other communities now are opening up the doors to embrace the arts and having a person in charge of their arts and cultural. So that was, I did that. You know what I mean? I gave that to the world. Now I need to I need to do what I want to do, yeah, the way I want to do it. And I'm still giving that to the world, right? Yeah, so I haven't stopped.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I created that platform, and it's working very well. There's no need for me to tinker with it.
Yeah.
Now I need to create something else.
Would you consider going deeper into politics?
I wrestled with the thought, but nah.
No.
I wouldn't, because I'm not a politician, and I know the world does not need another politician, but the world needs a politician. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need the political rhetoric, but we need the political temperament.
Mm.
And I don't have the rhetoric nor the temperament. So I leave that up for someone else. But I would always work closely with the political structures to make sure that they're doing the right thing. And not in a badging way, badgering way. Like, I'm like, on your back, you got to do this. But just in a more of a counsel way to say, hey, man, this is the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's why it's important for them to surround themselves with good people like you,
mm-hmm,
who not only is a good person, but also understands the community,
mm-hmm,
and understands being a creative too.
Right.
That's an important part of it.
Absolutely.
I remember, and shout out to Robert Carnegie, man, Councilman Robert Carnegie, and because I remember when he first got into office and he created this
Project Ambassador of Arts and Culture.
I was like, what is that?
Everybody was like, what is that?
Yeah. But then, and you're right, man, like, with the art walk, I remember when the art walk,
mm-hmm,
you know, you guys do it every year. It's like, right, it's what, eighth annual, seventh annual?
It should be, yeah, it should be like seventh annual.
Seventh annual, yeah. So that's amazing, mm-hmm, you know? And so, and there's so many artistic people in that Crown Heights, Bed-Stuy area that it just makes sense. You know?
And what's funny is that there are people that are benefiting from it that don't even know what happened. Right.
Yes.
They don't even know why they're benefiting or what caused their benefit. And it's cool. You know what I mean? But that's the way it's supposed to. That's the way it's supposed to be. They laughed at me when, you know, when the councilman was like, hey, this is my ambassador. They laughed at him. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now it's like, okay, this is what it is. And everyone,
I think we need one over here, right? In this district.
Everybody, yeah. I think everybody needs one, because art and culture, what people don't understand, is the driving force, is the economic force of every society. People don't come to your town for tourism based on what? On your politics. Nobody cares about that. They don't come because you have great lawyers. Maybe they may show up because you got a great doctor. But really, tourism comes to your town based on the culture and the artistic artifacts of that society, right? And that's what drives tourism. They come, they go to Broadway because of the plays,
mm-hmm,
and then they take back the souvenirs, right? You go to France because of the cuisine, right?
And the art.
And the
museums,
art. And the museums. You go to Africa because just of the culture itself, to experience.
Yeah.
So that's what drives the economy, not all that other stuff. You know what I'm saying? Even the architecture, it's done by an artist. You create that through arts.
That's true.
Right? So if you remove arts and culture from any society, you have absolutely nothing. You almost have a black hole. Right?
That's
so
true.
That's what we need to curate, and that's what we need to cultivate more. And that's why I fight so hard, and I get so upset when people try to trivialize,
mm-hmm,
the arts. And when people make comments and say, oh, you know, he's just an, and they make the quotation, artist. And I'm like, well, what does that mean?
Because what does that mean?
In order for you to become an intellect, that is predicated on your knowledge of the arts. How many books you've read,
mm-hmm,
what paintings you know,
mm-hmm,
even mathematical, how smart you are with math. And all of that is the arts. So how dare you throw up your quotations, because in order for you to be who you are, you have to study me. So it's so how do you now ridicule me?
Yeah.
When you couldn't exist without me.
So do you find, what is your big, the biggest challenge that you find, man, like in 2019, and you're like, look, I'm not dealing with this in 2020.
People. I'm not dealing with people. I can laugh and be comfortable without, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not out to, like, shame anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. But I realize I have the ability to walk away. I have the ability to say no, close my door, and go back to sleep.
That's a great feeling, man.
Yeah, like, I don't... So, like, in 2019, prior, I was so like, wow, I need this person. I got to have this person. And I'm like, no, you really don't, Joe. You really don't. What you need and what you have to have is those good people that are around you that will pour into you and you can pour into them rather than people who are trying to steal from you.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Takers.
Yeah.
I call them takers.
Because the truth is, and I know you for a long time, Gene, you will give anyone anything if they ask.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do it, all you have to do, you don't have to steal from you.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? People don't have to manipulate you.
Preach.
You know what I mean?
DeMarcus pointed at me like, yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah, people don't have to manipulate
no,
you.
No, they don't.
All they got to do is ask. Yeah. And when people, and so when you surround yourself with a bunch of piranhas and people and scavengers,
mm-hmm.
you know, they pick you apart and that tears at your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened to me for a long time. And now I'm like, you know what, man? I don't have to play in that. I don't have to play in that pond. There's some good people right over here that I can hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make me a better person, and I can make them a better person. You know, and I go back again. We're talking about faith, ground, inspire. Iron sharpens iron. That's you know, you only get better because you play a better opponent.
It's interesting, man, because I'm 38, right?
Mm-hmm.
People always ask me the question. Oh man, you're like ahead of your time. And I've always been, when I was 18, I was always ahead, mm-hmm. you know, because I started so young, because what I do is I listen and I pay attention to everybody that's older than me.
Right.
Right. And you said you're turning 50. I didn't know that. Yeah. Number one. Right. Yeah. I'm thinking you're like 42, 43, but, but it's all good, man. Black don't crack. The thing about it is I've always watched you and learned from you, right? Mm. And the more I listen to you, the more I learn. And it's interesting because, like, I'm at that space now where at 38 where I'm just like, you know, like I had a conversation with my boy DeMarcus and it was all about being totally transparent. Like, what you sacrifice, you would sacrifice everything for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But then you would, because you're sacrificing for someone else, you might lose something that was really dear to you. And because your heart is like, nah, I gotta help this guy. I gotta help this lady. I gotta do it. But then as soon as it's time for them to, they'll stab you five times,
bro. Oh
yeah. And leave you on the street dead, you know?
Oh yeah.
And that's not happening in 2020.
Yeah.
That's not happening in 2020. 2020 is all about positive. It's all about just surrounding yourself with people that are all like the Hustlers Ball convention.
Yeah.
Having those people to come together was amazing. And those people are all like-minded people.
Right.
You know, and growing that. And that's how you're going to build.
Right.
You know, and that's how it's going to, and not coming from a place of lack.
Right.
I think people that operate from that place of just like not having, and there's not enough in the pot, they'll try to take yours.
Right.
And they don't
like
that you're eating.
Yeah.
They just like, oh no, I have to have yours because it's not fair that you have so much.
Right. And so what's funny is I suffer from that so much,
mm-hmm.
that people would rather. There's so many people that wanted me to fail at everything that I was doing that they were just taking. And it would go behind my back and try to take my resources from behind my back. And I'm like, wow, all you had to do was ask. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to take. But those are the people that I removed myself from.
Yeah.
And every single person in this world, they're exactly where they're supposed to be at this particular moment. You know what I mean? It's like, When you look at somebody and they're down, you say, wow, this dude knows so many people. He has so many resources. Mm-hmm. Why can't he get past go? Or why can't she get past go? And then you look at their character and you realize why they can't. You know what I mean? You realize how they get stuck and why they're stuck in their situations. And those are the people that you have to get away from. Those are the people that I have to get away from. You know what I mean? The people who are not succeeding. And it's funny. I look at people like Diddy and Jay-Z and all these guys, and they moved on. And they people say, man, he forgot about us. No, he didn't forget about you. You know what? He did forget about you. And rightly so. Because if he would have continuously remembered you, he'd be just like you.
Jeez.
You know what I mean?
That's a hard...
But it's true.
Man, it's... growth is something... When we're kids, you want to elevate, right? Everybody wants to elevate. But if you don't want to elevate, but I do...
Right?
I can't keep coming back down to try to grab you and bring you up.
That's right.
If you don't have the intention, or I remember when I was a kid, I had a childhood friend, and you know we would sit on the stoop and we would just look at fancy cars. I'm like, man, we didn't have a permit, license, nothing. We used to be like, man, one day I'm gonna drive a Benz.
Right.
And then he would say, as long as I have a car to get me from A to B, that's all I want. I'm like, nah, man. Like, I want that. And not because of the material part of it. It was just the fact that if there's an opportunity for me to make enough money to live a certain lifestyle, why not?
Right.
You know? And then once you get that, then it's like, you know what? I want. I was like, you hear people talking about development. I want to build that. You know, I want to do something bigger. I want to, our mutual friend Richard, he's coming on the show, right?
Okay.
And he said, there's a picture that I actually gifted him because he put it on Instagram, right? And it was like one of the, you have to do the same thing, man. Like, it's a picture of him selling art, at 14th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had like this fence, he put the art, and then he shows the gallery.
Right?
And I took the picture and I had my graphic team put it together, and we put together a canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And that picture meant a lot for me. Right. I should have kept it for myself.
Right.
But it just showed me like the growth and the evolution. And there were so many people that he probably went, came across that aren't in his life in the beginning that probably said, but you're not an artist. How do you think you're going to have a gallery?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember when he came in 2012, they were like, why open an art gallery in Bed-Stuy? No one's buying art here. Like, your art is too expensive. Like, who are these people? Like, I can go to Michael's.
Right.
And now he's celebrating 11 years. You know what I'm saying? So.
Right.
And he's in Art Basel, all these artists that he's representing, like, it's so crazy. So, but that's the same thing. And even when you talk about Jay-Z and Puffy for his birthday posted a picture of, not for his birthday, for Jay-Z's birthday in December. He had a picture of him and Jay-Z when they were like, I don't know if they just started. But they were next to each other. They had like basketball jerseys on, and they were on their phone, like their two-way pages. And they looked so young and so like they weren't broke, but they just didn't look like they had a lot of money, you know?
They weren't mature yet.
Right. But now they showed another picture of them at Puffy's 50th birthday party, you know? And it just was like, yo, man.
Right.
And the same thing, you know what I mean? People that, you know, and some people want to fight to bring you down.
Dame Dash, right? So
he's a Dame Dash.
But I'm saying, like, that's like Dame Dash, and it's sad because that was a great duo.
Yeah.
Right? But if Jay-Z was to continuously do what he did when he was with Dame, he would be exactly where Dame is right now. And unfortunately... You know,
Dave is gonna beat you up, bro.
He might. I box you.
You box, yeah. You do box.
Yeah, I know how to dodge a jab.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we could get in the ring and you know, put on a charity event.
Yeah,
we both over 50.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, that'd be good. I'm there, bro.
But and again, Dame is an intelligent
man.
Yeah,
he's a great businessman.
You know what I mean? He's a great businessman. But
I think his emotions, like, and people don't want to be around that much of a pat. You know how you said in the beginning of the podcast, you said you don't want to overdo it. I think a lot of times, people, he was too passionate for a lot of people.
Right.
You know, and it came across too, you know, but,
But yeah, so, you know, you have to grow, you got to move on. And, like I remember me being on the street corners when I first did my first movie, The Sty, and I did the series, and people were like, "Yo, this should never work. You can't sell a DVD for $10 and then do a series and expect people to come back and give you another $10 for the next episode and so forth and so on. Why don't you just make it a movie?" And I was like, "Nah, I'm gonna stick to my guns."
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wanted to pick it up. So I took it to the streets, and I was out on a street corner, you know, in the wintertime, selling DVDs hand to hand. And I sold close to 50,000 units of the entire series, to the point where now we're doing, which is 15 years later, we're doing The Sty 2.0, which is, it picks up 15 years from where The Sty left off. And that's because popular demand. Like, people are like, "Yo, you got to bring that back. You got to bring it back." So I'm like, I can't bring the old story back because all those people are grown. So 15 years later, what's going on in The Sty? So The Sty 2.0, and that comes because of that hustle, right? Like, people wanted it. And it's going to be, it's so 2020, you got The Sty 2.0. That's going
like
to be, it's going to be amazing. We're going to talk about human trafficking that's taking place. We're going to talk about gentrification. We're going to talk about, those are two main topics that we're going to talk about, and we're going to do it through the church and through the police department, the church, the politics, and of course the underworld of The Sty.
Yeah, I like that, man.
Yeah.
So I asked you this question before. I'm going to ask it to you again because you're in a different space right now, and it was 2020. Out of Faith, Grind, Inspire, which word resonates with you? Now,
faith.
Okay.
Faith. Faith is because the grind I can do. The inspiration I can give. But the faith, that's not mine. You know what I mean? The faith, you just have to have that. And you just got to believe that everything will fall into place. That once you grind and once you inspire, that the good things are going to happen regardless of what, even in your darkest of moments. You know what I mean? You have to have that faith that there's a light that's going to shine on you afterwards, because this is your anointment. And if you don't have that, no matter how hard you grind or what people try to inspire into you, or you try to inspire into others, will never work. So the word faith, to me, where I am right now, I am truly walking by faith.
Wow. Appreciate you, brother. And thank you, bro. So, guys, I want to thank you guys for tuning in to another great episode of Faith, Grind, Inspire podcast. I want to thank my man Joseph Grant for coming in and blessing us. Giving
you didn't know where to find me?
Oh, shoot. Sorry. Sorry, man. I just, right?
I don't know if you put something at the bottom. Or,
No. You're going to tell people right now.
Okay.
Go ahead. Where can we find you?
You can go on my my website, GhettoEyesPublishing.com. That's GhettoEyesPublishing.com. You can find me on Instagram at Joe's Eyes, JoezEyez. Or you can find me at, on my website, JosephCGrantJr.com.
And all the links are in there.
And all the links to everything else
that
I'm doing.
What about Spark?
Spark TV, the link will be there as well, but you can go to Spark TV. Please go to Spark TV, download the app so you can see exclusively To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy, the series. It's a wonderful series. It's a beautiful series. It's only $4.99, and there's a lot of other great independent filmmakers with great films that are on there as well to keep you entertained after you have binged episodes of To Live and Die in Bed-Stuy.
Appreciate it, man. So, guys, thank you for joining us. Joe, my man Joe Grant. Go support all his content. Check his website out. Thank you guys for tuning in to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspired Podcast. Thank you to our producers, our team. And continue to grind, continue to shine, and keep going no matter what. God bless. Peace.